The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You know, this is a guy, Donald Trump, who sits around all day watching Fox News and doesn't actually do much. He hasn't done many of these events, you know, these major addresses over the course of his campaign. And it's only now that it appears that he's either even or behind that he now is complaining. He's got to go out and do some work.
Friday's RFK endorsement and today's observance of Biden's disgraceful Afghan withdrawal, where 45 laid wreaths with the family members of the fallen in Arlington, has stolen Harris's convention momentum. Meanwhile, we haven't seen Kamala since Thursday night. After spending last week inside a hotel room rehearsing every line of her speech, she's now pulling a Biden and going AWOL for debate prep. 4 days straight of debate prep. The last time a Democrat overprepared for a debate, they got knocked out with one punch.
Robert Kennedy Jr., the Jeffrey Dahmer of the animal kingdom, has horrified his family almost as much as Jeffrey Dahmer horrified his family by endorsing the most horrifying Republican presidential nominee in history, the only president who was more of a criminal in the White House than Richard Nixon, who Robert Kennedy Jr.'s father tried to keep out of the presidency by running against him until Bobby Kennedy was assassinated, which instantly, and it seemed permanently, created a beatific glow around the name Robert Kennedy, a name which his son has now fully disgraced.
There are a lot of people who have noticed the pronounced change in the way the Democratic Party has operated since Donald Trump's election. There's a new attitude that if you're not completely down the line in favor of or supportive of the current administration, that you're an enemy. And they did this to everyone from Bernie Sanders to Tulsi Gabbard, who just endorsed Trump today, to RFK Jr., to the people from the Green Party who historically lean Democratic and are no longer going to do that likely.
Lawrence O'Donnell can scream all that he wants. And what a comparison, by the way. He's comparing RFK to a serial killer. Really? I guess Hitler wasn't available as an analogy this time around. But Taibbi there, the last bit, he's right. Elon Musk, as we noted yesterday, I mean, Donald Trump's putting together quite the team of rivals, to use the title of that book some years ago about President Lincoln and what he did to rally the nation around a unifying message. He's right, Taibbi. What a collection, as I noted on yesterday's show, between Elon Musk, RFK, now Tulsi Gabbard. She came out. She's campaigning for Donald Trump. He keeps winning endorsements, and Kamala and company keep disappearing. I guess they had their 3 or 4 days of partying, all those good vibes. But what have they been doing since? You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to this program every weekday morning live at 11:05 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone of the United States at trumpetdaily.com. Or you can go to the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. We have, every once in a while, we'll have a few glitches with our website. And every once in a while, Rumble will have a few glitches. So it's nice to have both of those website addresses so that you have a backup plan in case you want to watch the program every day with the live audience. So lots to get to on today's show. I just want to begin, I don't know if the guys have an image or the footage yesterday of that ceremony, the memorial service, 3 years on. And I mean, what better picture or footage to show you what's real and what's fake? I mean, let's play along with the Democrats. They're pretending that Donald Trump's the incumbent at the moment. Otherwise, how could you argue that we've got new and fresh policies to take the country in a new direction? Well, hang on a second. You're part of the government, the current government. But the current government is fake. It's illegitimate. It stole the election. And here you have this disastrous Afghan pullout 3 years ago, and the whole world saw it. And you had all those Marines, U.S. Marines, that were slaughtered by that suicide bomber. And the Joe Obama people, they don't even mention it. They don't bother to show up. And guess who does show up? Well, that would be the real president, President Donald Trump. He's not even in office. And he's the one who's there. He's the one who's there remembering our fallen soldiers. It tells you everything that you need to know about the attack on America from within. And who Joe Obama sees as the enemy. It's this man, Donald Trump. It's the military even. I mean, they certainly have corrupted the top tier of the military, Joe Obama and the radical left. But they hate the country. They hate the foundational institutions. And the only thing that they can do, and we'll get to it if we have some time, is, as I said yesterday, mirror the policies of Donald Trump to try to win an election. To hear Kamala now talking about how she wants to build a border wall after all these years of mocking it, after all mocking the idea, mocking Donald Trump. She called it a vanity project. After all these years of being the so-called border czar and telling us that the border was secure, now she's out there saying she's going to build a wall. I mean, this is unbelievable. They're just copying Donald Trump because they've got nothing. They've got nothing politically except copying Trump's policies and cheating, stealing, murdering, all those things, assassinating. Yeah, they will pull out all the stops to try to maintain their grip on power. On power. And they're failing. Never mind what, who is it? Pritzker, is that his name? The guy from Illinois? Talking about Trump, he's lazy, he never works. Really? What about the fake president? Where's he? He's the one that's supposedly running the country right now. And then, after the four-day vibe fest, Kamala disappears. And she's got, how many days does she have left before she does the sit-down interview with somebody? Her campaign's out there trying to get a feel for, well, who should she sit down with? 4 days. She said she'll get it in by the end of this month. Well, the clock is ticking. She's disappeared. She's preparing for the debate that might not happen now because she's got a new set of demands. We've got to be able to sit down and I've got to be able to take a cheat sheet. I've got to be able to take some notes with me. She can't think for herself for 90 minutes. She's trying to get out of it, really. And Trump, we'll see what he does. But meanwhile, you've got RFK joining the team, and he's saying yesterday that he's going to be a part of the transition team for Donald Trump. Tulsi Gabbard probably will as well. Elon Musk has said he'll serve if he has to. And Trump's kind of said, well, you know, he's probably too busy for any kind of position in government. Maybe he'll be more of a consultant. But Elon Musk as part of Donald Trump's team? We're watching a spectacular fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Just like we said in this Trumpet magazine. This is from a year and a half ago. I'll give you a quote from it here in just a second. This is from Sundance, the New York Post, quoting from the New York Post. Well, first of all, Sundance at Conservative Treehouse, he's talking about how RFK was on with Tucker and he said that Trump had sure enough offered him a position in the transition team. I mean, what if he's put over NIH or the FDA or given a position in government, as they said yesterday at the end of the show, to rein in Big Pharma, to get rid of all of these gross connections, these conflicts of interest. The New York Post says here, a shocking partisan switch is underway in the stratosphere of the tech titans. The industry, known for its wokeness, is betting big bucks on a Republican. Last week, President Trump gave a thumbs up to the notion of teaming up with billionaire innovator Elon Musk if he wins in November. Hours later, Musk posted a message on X, "I am willing to serve." Here's a billionaire, many times over, saying that he's willing to serve in a Trump administration. Let's just go down the line of that man's voting record. His recent voting record: voted for Biden in 2020, voted for Clinton in 2016, voted for Obama in 2012, voted for Obama in 2008. And now he's aligning himself with Donald Trump. Elon Musk for Commerce Secretary, or perhaps for the newly created position of free speech czar? Wouldn't that be awesome? It says here, this is the New York Post, whether or not Musk actually joins a Trump administration, Trump himself said Sunday that the mogul is likely too busy to do it, but he could consult. Musk voted for Hillary. Well, he gives the voting rundown. Just amazing, this turn of events. And then you've got yesterday, you've got Zuckerberg acknowledging that, I censored speech. I censored speech because of the Biden administration. And really, when you go back to Hunter, I mean, this was when Trump was in office. Basically, Zuckerberg is acknowledging indirectly that there is a deep state and that it was working in opposition to Donald Trump in the lead up to the 2020 election. Now, he's also said it carried on into 2021, where Joe Biden's people, where Joe Biden's DOJ was applying pressure. And Zuckerberg says, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to succumb to that pressure, those intimidation tactics. Now, Zuckerberg's not on board that I know of politically, but he's certainly singing a different tune than he was 4 years ago. Same with Musk, same with all of them. This was the piece or clip from Fox News regarding Zuckerberg's acknowledgement yesterday, clip one.
And the reason that we know about this letter that Mark Zuckerberg sent to Jim Jordan is because Jim Jordan posted it. So about COVID censorship, Mark Zuckerberg writes, in 2021, senior officials of the Biden administration, including those from the White House, repeatedly pressured our teams for months to censor certain COVID-19 related content, including humor and satire, and expressed significant frustration when we did not meet their demands. I believe the government pressure was wrong, and I regret that we were not more outspoken about it. On that point, a few minutes ago, a White House official told us, when confronted with a deadly pandemic, this administration encouraged responsible actions to protect public health and safety. Our position has been clear and consistent. We believe tech companies and other private actors should take into account the effects their actions have on the American people while making independent choices about the information they present. And that's not all. Zuckerberg is also writing about Hunter Biden censorship. He says, when we saw a New York Post story reporting on corruption allegations involving then Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's family, we sent that story to fact checkers for review and temporarily demoted it while we were waiting for a reply. It's since been made clear that the reporting was not Russian disinformation, and in retrospect, we should not have demoted the story.
But you see, at that time, the deep state was telling Zuckerberg and the big tech giants that it was Russian disinformation. All of those former intel agents, 51 of them, I think, that signed on to lie about the laptop. Yeah, from Brennan, John Brennan on down. That was in 2020. It shows you, I'll just give you the quote. This is from this issue of the Trumpet magazine. Ready for War, January 2023. My father says the battle lines are drawn. The stage is set for one of the most dramatic fulfillments of biblical prophecy we have yet seen in our lifetimes. On one side of this political battle in America is the Democratic Party and the radical left. There is also, we now know, establishment Republicans. They are joined by the media, both leftist and conservative, and big tech, it says, with the single exception now of Twitter. This is soon after Musk had bought Twitter. All are arrayed together. On the other side is Donald Trump, virtually alone. Well, he's not as lonely as he was back when that was written. We're seeing, as my father has said, we're seeing the dramatic fulfillment of biblical prophecy right before our eyes. As I was saying on yesterday's show, I mean, there's people coming out of the woodwork. They're coming out of the closet in support for Trump. Even celebrities. Well, billionaires. People that never would have said something positive about Trump just 2 years ago. A year ago, maybe. What a change. What a remarkable shift we're witnessing. It's right across the board. Tulsi Gabbard. Now, she has been a Fox News commentator, so she's definitely more like RFK, more of the traditional Democrat variety. But as far as I know, I mean, she still sees herself as a Democrat, or maybe she did come out and say, I'm independent now. But here's another lifelong Democrat. Sundance says, former Democrat turned independent Tulsi Gabbard, a former congresswoman from Hawaii, today endorsed President Donald Trump against Vice President Harris. Representative Gabbard served Hawaii's 2nd Congressional District. We'll give some details here. It says here, after Robert Kennedy endorsed President Trump, Kennedy shared over the weekend that several prominent Democrats were expected to join forces with President Trump and announce endorsements over the next week. Gabbard appears to be one of the first in that predictive cycle. So the narrative, you know, you listen to Pritzker and you just think Trump, all he does is golf and he's kicking back in the recliner watching Fox News. Look at what he's doing. Look at the announcement comes Friday, RFK. That's the day after the Good Vibes Convention. And then Monday, there he is at the ceremony, the memorial service, 3 years on from the disastrous Afghan pullout, the withdrawal. That saw how many of our Marines killed, 11 or 12, I forget the number, but Trump's the only one that's there showing support for those that are dying for their country, this country. What? And now you see this team of rivals that he's pulling together. Here again, you look at that book from Doris Goodwin. Lincoln and, I mean, the country, there are some parallels here. I mean, Lincoln and Trump in a lot of ways are very different. But Lincoln, I mean, came out of nowhere. He was in Congress, I think, for a couple of years. He lost a lot of political races. And then he comes out of nowhere and he's hated, really, on both sides. And he starts pulling together people to be part of his administration that hate him. It's an interesting story. I mean, it's by a left-wing author, but still, it's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating bit of history for the United States. This is what that author had to say in her introduction. Again, the team of rivals. It says that Lincoln, after winning the presidency, made the unprecedented decision to incorporate his imminent rivals into his political family. The cabinet was evidence of a profound self-confidence and first indication of what would prove to others a most unexpected greatness. Seward became the Secretary of State, Chase the Secretary of the Treasury, Bates the Attorney General. The remaining top posts Lincoln offered to three former Democrats whose stories also inhabit these pages. Gideon Welles, Lincoln's Neptune, was made Secretary of the Navy. Montgomery Blair became Postmaster General. And Edwin Stanton, Lincoln's Mars eventually became Secretary of War. Every member of this administration was better known, better educated, and more experienced in public life than Lincoln. He brought them all together. In some ways, he could have felt threatened that they'd all outshine him. But Lincoln was a humble man. And Lincoln loved his country. Lincoln, like we discussed yesterday, was willing to make some sacrifices for the good of the nation, for the preservation of the Union. Is that what we're seeing play out right now, today? I mean, from what I can observe, Donald Trump is certainly holding strong with many of his policies, his vision for the country. But it's not so far out, at least not in the mind of Elon Musk. Not the way Scarborough and company told us it was. For 4 years, 8 years actually, 9 years. He has a track record. People now, you see, they're waking up to the fact, well, okay, he was in there for 4 years, and but for COVID, I mean, the economy was booming. The cost for groceries was low. There wasn't an invasion at the southern border. Maybe he's not so bad. You saw that, or I at least referred to that clip, the conservative commentator walking through South Chicago, just talking to all these black residents there saying, yeah, Obama didn't do anything for this neighborhood. Obama hasn't helped Chicago at all. Trump did. So he's peeling away. Minorities, Hispanics too. I mean, just all of them. And then these unlikely alliances with Democrats. And he's certainly taken over the Republican Party. There's a few rhinos still around here and there. There's a lot of weak leaders in Congress, for sure. This book, The Team of Rivals, it says, this then is a story of Lincoln's political genius revealed through his extraordinary array of personal qualities that enabled him to form friendships with men who had previously opposed him, to repair injured feelings that left untended might have escalated into permanent hostility, to assume responsibility for failures of subordinates, to share credit with ease, and to learn from mistakes. He possessed an acute understanding of the sources of power inherent in the presidency, an unparalleled ability to keep his governing coalition intact, a tough-minded appreciation of the need to protect his presidential prerogatives, and a masterful sense of timing. His success in dealing with the strong egos of the men in his cabinet suggests that in the hands of a truly great politician, the qualities we generally associate with decency and morality, kindness, sensitivity, compassion, honesty, and empathy, can also be impressive political resources. You know, much is made about the put-downs, the mean tweets, and whatever else. But look at how many people that Donald Trump has just welcomed right back into the fold if they turn back. People that have just absolutely hated Donald Trump, despised him. Like I said about that Isaacson biography about Musk, you read through that and you know that Musk has no love for Donald Trump, or at least had no love. And now you listen to both of them talk about each other. It is remarkable, as I said, just going back to that Trumpet magazine. All of these forces that were aligned against Donald Trump. And I mean, he still is facing a strong opposition. I mean, they're willing to assassinate him. That happened just a few weeks ago, a month and a half ago. And we still don't know anything about the shooter, by the way. No, that's a big mystery. That's a mystery. We're never going to get to the bottom of that. The regime has just moved on. They're not interested in an attempted assassination against the 45th president of the United States. Happened in mid-July, and it's already fallen off the map. There's no care or concern for that particular story. I mean, even the Afghan pullout, as disastrous as that was, people were hanging from planes, on the outside of planes. as the U.S. was evacuating. And guess what? No one has been fired over that. Marines were murdered. That happened. And then little Afghan children were murdered, or at least killed. Let's not say it was on purpose. But to just fire drones into neighborhoods in response to that? Yeah, that's what Milley did. Nobody punished. Nobody fired. Just move right on. And then, to add insult to injury, when the memorial service comes around, just ignore it. When the memorial service happens for the Marines, U.S. Marines, American Marines, just ignore it. Don't show up. And when you talk about Afghanistan, just say it was brilliant. Just say the departure of U.S. troops was brilliant. The handover of all of that military hardware to the Taliban, it was just perfect. It was exactly what we wanted. And then when you talk about your presidency, fake at that, talk about how there's no U.S. servicemen have died in combat. Just pretend that it's been a perfect record. America's under attack. It's being attacked from within by the radical left, but they're being hemmed in. They're being exposed. The so-called pro-democracy party, they're being exposed as authoritarians, as communists. This is from the Federalist. It says, in a blow to the Democrat Party's plan to politically whack the competition through cyclical lawfare, the Green Party's presidential ticket will remain on swing state Wisconsin's general election ballot. The Democrats were trying to get the Green Party blotted out of the ballot in Wisconsin. Why? Why? They're pro-democracy, I thought. No, they're not. They hate democracy. That's why their candidate for president has never gotten a vote, has never gotten a delegate. Nothing. Zero. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, which holds a 4-3 liberal majority, on Monday rejected a DNC operative's petition asking the court to take original jurisdiction in the case. So they want to blot out the Green Party. They hate the Green. Listen, if you turn on them, look at RFK. I mean, Larry O'Donnell's just calling him Jeffrey Dahmer of all things. How deranged and perverse do you need to be in your thinking to say that RFK is Jeffrey Dahmer? That's right. I mean, Lawrence is horrified. He's horrified. The Kennedy family is horrified. Here's RFK, as I said on yesterday's show. He's disowned by his family. But, you know, he's speaking some common sense, certainly with respect to, you know, the food production companies and the FDA and Big Pharma and all the drugs and the vaccines and the declining health of our children. The spread of diabetes and heart disease and cancers, cancer hitting younger and younger people. What is going on? Well, he actually wants to look into that. Now, again, a lot of these individuals, Trump included, they've got billions of dollars, millions in the case of the Kennedy family. I don't know how wealthy they are, but they're like royalty in some circles here in the United States. But there he is, risking his reputation. You know, they asked RFK, by the way, about his family members disowning him. And he just talked about how that, well, within families, there are disagreements, but, you know, it shouldn't separate us. I still love my family. He took the high road. Some of his other relatives are out there saying, I'm never going to speak to him again. These radicals are being exposed. They're the ones filled with so much hatred and with the spirit to blot out and to censor. And Elon Musk saw it, and Zuckerberg sees it, or at least admits it now. RFK sees it. They tried to destroy him. His campaign went virtually bankrupt. They used lawfare to try to get RFK off the ballot. And then they're doing the same thing to try to get the Green Party off the ballot in Wisconsin. Isn't that nice? The pro-democracy party. It's laughable, isn't it? Of course it is. This is Kamala Harris on the border wall from Axios. Just today. If she's elected president, Kamala Harris pledges to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the wall along the southern border, a project she once opposed and called un-American during the Trump administration. And so, you know, Axios has the breaking story. And I'm sure whoever sits down with Kamala, if she in fact has an interview by the end of the week, they'll be very gentle about this. They won't bring up all of the old footage where she's talking about it being un-American or Donald Trump's vanity project. What happened to that? What happened to those arguments? She's going to get an interviewer who just throws her a nice little softball that she can just knock right out of the park. Someone from the regime. You can be sure of that. Here she is over the years when talking about a border wall. Clip 9.
You don't need to build a wall. This is a crisis of his own making. And by definition, just plain speak, basic English language definition, it is not an emergency. We're looking at military resources being focused again on the president's vanity project instead of focused on real national security issues. It's the president's vanity project. You know, I mean, listen, if we deconstruct, get the pun, deconstruct wall. You know, let's be clear. And again, let's just point to the facts and the evidence and the data. And the fact is that we are not facing a crisis. The crisis we're facing is a crisis of leadership. That's the crisis. That's the crisis. And a wall won't cure that. This issue is about a vanity project for this president.
Right.
And it is a problem of his own making. General California, I specialize on transnational criminal organizations.
Yeah.
That wall ain't gonna stop them.
No.
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 Isn't it funny? It's just so funny. Just make fun of Trump, make fun of his policies. And then when you come around to the presidential campaign of 2024, go ahead and say, flip-flop. Now we need a fence. Now we need a border. Just like we had around the DNC convention. Just like Nancy Pelosi put around D.C. after the fake insurrection. The Democrats, I mean, when it serves their purposes, they'll put up a fence overnight if they have to. They certainly have them in their communities where they live. They won't, and they're not going to allow Venezuelans to just walk right into the DNC convention without proper credentials, you see. You've got to be credentialed to attend one of their good vibes session. There they are, yucking it up. A border wall, that's un-American. That's a Trump vanity project. And then out comes the Axios revelation just today. She's been in hiding, preparing for the debate, and trying to figure out what her policies are. That brings to mind another one. This is Politico. It says here, Harris gave him a deadline. I'm picking it up in the middle here. I've talked to my team. She said, I want to get us an interview scheduled before the end of the month. So that's 4 days from now, right? Further on, it says, Harris campaign staff have been asking reporters who they think she should talk to. Behind the scenes, TV producers from big name anchors have been calling the campaign to pitch their talent as the person she has to do it with. Now listen to this. Harris, are you listening, Pritzker? Harris has had a light schedule since accepting the nomination Thursday in Chicago, and several sources said she has been using the time not just to prepare for her September 10 debate with Trump, but to map out a media strategy for the next few weeks. How can we get the regime media to get us across the finish line first in November? They're planning their narratives. They're planning their policies. Even if you only have to keep them for 70-some days, yeah, just go out and talk about a border wall. And you know, the regime media, they're not going to bring up the footage that I just showed you right there. They'll blot it out. They're good at that. Notice how when Zuckerberg said the feds were pressuring him not to put posts out, it included posts that were humorous or that was satire. Can you imagine an America where the government is controlling the funny things, the funny posts? I mean, they've already gone after. And that one guy, remember, that went after Hillary Clinton with a meme? The feds went after him to put him in jail. They're a little sensitive. When they're mocking Donald Trump, and I saw a story today where they're shifting more from the, going after him as an authoritarian, a Hitler-like figure that's going to destroy democracy. They're now moving to just making fun of him. Let's try to mock him. Let's say he's lazy. See if that sticks. I mean, they're trying everything, and nothing's working. Yesterday, Tulsi Gabbard, a couple days before that, RFK. Who's it going to be today? And how are they going to respond tomorrow? Well, they'll come out. There's going to be plenty of talking heads that say, hey, we're crushing it. I mean, I've never felt so many good vibes. And then the polling, all these fake polls I can show you. She's way ahead. Rasmussen said there was a little bit of a bump during the convention, and now it's settled back down, and you've got Trump taking the 2 to 3% lead. That's one of the honest pollsters. It's just like my father says in here. This was a year and a half ago at the Trumpet. If you don't have a subscription, by the way, make sure you call our operators and request a free subscription. There's no cost or obligation. You can get tomorrow's news today. There's others that use that tagline, by the way. We've had it for decades. Tomorrow's news today. That's right. 1-866. I can't forget that. 930-3024. So she's had a light schedule because they're trying to devise a media strategy. It's all about lying and deceiving. It's all about fake and phony narratives for these people. But listen to this one. This is that same Politico piece. It says here, what about Tim? That's Tim Walz. What about Tim? One of the issues that the Harris world is currently working to address is how to deploy running mate Tim Walz in the media. How can we use Tim? This is funny. They're trying to figure out how to get all their stories straight, how to get policies that we all know and understand. It says here, the danger, this is Politico, the danger in sending him out to do big solo interviews is that he might not have a full command of where Harris is on every issue. As someone pointed out to us last night, Harris talks about the opportunity economy, but if Walz were asked to define it, would he know how? In other words, they don't know what their policies are. They don't know how to explain it. And then the same people that are commenting on this, they're saying, you know, Trump should talk about the issues. He is talking about the issues. He's the only one doing it. These people are talking about nothing. I mean, even some of their own are calling them out. How can you promote a new and exciting agenda when you're part of the current administration? It's a good question, Jake. It's a good question. The party that has no policies, the party that's copying some of Trump's policies. What was the quote? I need to give it to you again, because again, this is tomorrow's news. This is tomorrow's news today. This is the Trumpet magazine. Where is page 2? Maybe it's page 4. I brought my cheat sheet. It's not working so well, is it? Page 4. Page 5. Here we go. The battle lines are drawn. The stage is set for one of the most dramatic fulfillments of Bible prophecy we have yet seen in our lifetimes. That's what gets me excited. Okay, we watch and pray like Christ said that we should in Luke 21. We watch world events for sure. And as much as it might sound like it from time to time, we don't take sides politically. We really don't. But to see 2 Kings 14 and Amos 7 being fulfilled, to see such a dramatic fulfillment of Bible prophecy, I mean, that's a faith-building experience. There's that, and of course it works together with prayer. I gave a lecture yesterday on the subject of prayer and just pointed to the example of Jesus Christ. That man had more demands on him, on his time, than maybe any human being to walk this earth. There's one verse that says he went and tried to hide. He had to like scoot away from the throngs of people because everyone was coming out for the healings. They wanted to see the miracles. They wanted to hear him speak. And at one point he hid from them because he needed to commune with God. He needed to pray to God. He needed to maintain contact with God. And the disciples came after him once and said, hey, the crowd wants to see you. Don't leave them. They were kind of correcting Christ, if you can believe it. But there's another verse that says he tried to hide, but he couldn't. He couldn't hide. Now just think about it. I told this to the students. Just think about having that many demands, that much pressure. You know, people are just pushing up to just even touch your garment, it says in one verse, to see you, to feel you, to touch you. And yet through all of that, you could call it craziness, just a whirlwind of activity, Jesus Christ made sure that he was close to the Father, always, always. He stayed the night one time with Peter, his wife, and their family. Peter, Andrew, James, John, Jesus was there. They were all in Peter's house, and the house was probably tiny by today's comparisons. And the book of Mark says that he got up a great while before day. He got up early, early in the day and went off into a solitary place, a wilderness location, a desert wasteland, whatever you want to call it. You look at the Greek word and it just means a desolate wilderness. And what did he do out there? He prayed to God. That's how important his prayer life was. That's how high of a priority it was. Every day, he got it in. He walked by faith. He was close to God. And of course, he was watching world events as well. And so were the disciples. And Matthew 24 says that the disciples came and said, hey, tell us when all these prophecies are going to be fulfilled. Their minds were on prophecy. They were excited about the fulfillment of prophecy. They asked him, give us the blow-by-blow here. When are these things going to unfold? When will this happen? There's a lot of people, even in the world of traditional Christianity, that just dismiss prophecy or ignore it. Here it makes up a third of the Bible, at least. How could you ignore a third of this book given by inspiration of God? I mentioned the U.S. and Britain in prophecy just the other day, how that this needs to be put together with America under attack. If you don't have this classic text, I mean, this book has gone to millions worldwide. This book has been distributed more than any other piece of literature that we make available to you for free. No cost, no obligation. It went to well over 6 million households before Herbert Armstrong even died. And then who knows how many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands that we've sent it out to since. It's as applicable to what's happening today as it was back when it was first written in the 1940s and 50s. If you want to know where we fit the United States of America fits in Bible prophecy, if you want to know where Great Britain fits, or the others of the Commonwealth, those Commonwealth nations, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and so on, it's all discussed in here. If you want to know our roots, our biblical roots, it's all right here in this wonderful book, this master text on Bible prophecy. It really and truly is a masterpiece. That's not an overstatement. Prove me. Prove that it is. Make sure you request a free copy. This last story that I can get to, it's from Fox News. Alvin Bragg defers to Mershon, won't block Trump's request to push hush money sentencing until after the election. Not exactly sure what to make of this. Bragg's pulling back the attack dogs, though, but it would appear. I mean, Mershon could still be a persecutor. I guess he could still go forward with this. But look, everything is breaking down. Maybe these people are so deranged in their hatred for Trump that they really and truly do believe the regime media and all it said about the good vibes. I think Kamala's ahead. I think Kamala's crushing it. I think the basement candidate's going to win this. So who needs, if we got to go forward with this presidential campaign, the assassination doesn't work, we weren't able to put him in prison, Jack Smith's cases are breaking down. And then here comes Alvin Bragg. It says Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office said they would not oppose former President Donald Trump's request to push his sentencing date for his hush money conviction until after the November election, leaving the decision up to New York Supreme Court Judge Juan Mershon. You know, the judge that just keeps reappearing in these Trump cases because he hates Trump so much. It says here, the people defer to the court on the appropriate post-trial schedule that allows for adequate time to adjudicate defendant's motion while also pronouncing sentence without reasonable delay. This was a letter that Bragg penned to the church, sorry, the court, and Mershon. So another victory, it would seem, another victory for Donald Trump and his team. When we come back, just trying to see what we have some time for. Maybe we can conclude today's show with a few emails. You can email the program, by the way, if you write us at td@thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
If the Democrats' ultimate goal is power, which really their only purpose in life, then they can create an entirely new election process. Each year can be different. One year it can be hide the candidate and mass mail ballots. The next time it can be whack the nominee and hand over his war chest to a woman who won't do interviews. and they'll just lie to you about what they're doing and call it fair. You don't have a free press if the press isn't free to interview presidential nominees. Putin does more interviews than Kamala.
They'll just come up with ways to cheat every election cycle. They'll do whatever it takes, as my father said in that article back, I think it was 2018, maybe it was 2020. Whatever it takes to maintain their grip on power. And then they'll lie. They'll lie about their policies. They'll say, yeah, actually, we want to build a wall, too. We know it's needed. It's necessary. But dig a little bit deeper, and you see what their real policies are. This is from the New York Post. First-time homebuyers in Oregon are being encouraged to apply for a taxpayer-funded $30,000 grant for down payment assistance, but only non-U.S. citizens need apply. They're actually advertising this in Oregon. We'll give you a grant from the government so that you can put a down payment on a house. But the only catch is you've got to be a non-citizen. A non-citizen? Yeah, that's right. That's right. So yeah, we want a secure border. We'll even put up a wall. They'll say that for the next 70-some days. But this is their heart of hearts. This. And then the migrant crime. Just pretend that it's not really happening. Play this one from Democrat Senator Murphy, clip 5.
I mean, there are many neighborhoods in this country that have unacceptable levels of violence. That is just true. But you don't have to feed in to the irrational fear that Trump is trying to make people feel. And it is important to push back on this idea of a migrant crime wave. We don't have to accept that as the dominant narrative. Why? Because the data actually tells us that immigrants to this country commit crimes at a rate lower than natural-born Americans. Now, that is an inconvenient narrative for Fox News and for the Trump campaign, but it is true. So I think we have a moral obligation, as well as a political obligation, to push back against this idea that you are at risk if you live in a community with more migrants. And then we also just have to tell people that crime went up when Donald Trump was president. He did nothing to stop it. Crime is going down under Joe Biden, and he did something to stop it.
All lies. All lies. And let's just ignore the migrant crime narrative, says this senator. The New York Times, not the Post, the Times, how a migrant accused of rape was freed and charged with rape again. You see stories like this every day, every day. And the FBI can try to lie about the statistics or massage the statistics a little bit. But then you look at local stories. I mean, this one's a big paper, a big newspaper, not just but it's happening in New York. It's happening all over the place. For 15 months, Daniel Devon Bonilla sat in the Rikers Island jail complex in New York City, accused of raping a transgender woman in a migrant shelter. Then on June 24th, Bonilla stood before a judge in Brooklyn. The victim in the case had refused to testify, and now prosecutors were offering him a deal. He could plead guilty to the felony assault charge and be released that day. How nice of the prosecutors. If only President Trump could be on the receiving end of this kind of mercy. He's a rapist, an actual rapist. We'll just say that you did it and we'll let you go. There's your justice system in New York City. The judge, Donald Leo, warned Mr. Bonilla, a 24-year-old from Nicaragua, that he could be deported. Do you still wish to proceed with your plea of guilty? Of course, said Bonilla. In fact, the Federal Immigration Customs Agency, known as ICE, had informed the city that it intended to deport Bonilla when he was first charged with rape, the agency said. But neither the city nor the Brooklyn District Attorney notified federal officials when he was released that day in June. And then he went on to rape again. Coming to a city. Never mind Senator Murphy's comments. It's coming to a city near you. It's already there in most every case. That's all we have time for. On today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.